are listening to Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything.
At Radiotopia, we now have a select group of amazing supporters that help us make all our shows possible. If you would like to have your company or product sponsor this podcast, then get in touch. Drop a line to sponsor@radiotopia.fm. Thanks.
I'm Alex Schwartz.
I'm Nomi Fry.
I'm Vincent Cunningham, and this is Critics at Large, a New Yorker podcast for the culturally curious.
Each week, we're going to talk about a big idea that's showing up across the cultural landscape, and we'll trace it through all the mediums we love: books, movies, television, music, art.
And I always want to talk about celebrity gossip, too.
Of course.
We hope you'll join us for new episodes each Thursday. Follow Critics at Large today, wherever you get podcasts.
You are listening to Benjamin Walker's Theory of Everything. This installment is called Art de Vivre.
Art de Vivre, Part 1.
Art de Vivre, Part 1.
I get a lot of emails from listeners asking me who that voice is at the beginning of the podcast. It's actually Mathilde.
Hi.
My wife. And she is from France.
Yes, I'm French.
For the past few years now, we've been spending our summers in Paris and Burgundy, where Mathilde is from. And I've totally and completely fallen in love with the French way of life. Of course, it's unfair to pit France against America, because America doesn't even have a decent rail system or universal health care. But I can't help it. Bicycle-friendly roadways, rolling green hills, long afternoon lunches. One afternoon, I was picnicking alongside a canal in Paris, struggling to open a bottle of wine, when I was startled by a police officer who was rushing towards me. But he did not hogtie me and toss me into the back of his van. No, he offered me his bottle opener. I mean, let's face it, when it comes to life, France wipes the floor with America. Time, even time, is better in France. In France, people do their best to enjoy time. Whereas in America, the goal is to squeeze the clock until it is an empty, bloodless husk.
Non, mais c'est tellement cliché. T'as vraiment regardé trop de films français, Benjamin. Tu crois vraiment qu'en France, on passe notre temps à boire du vin?
What?
This is such an embarrassing cliché.
Okay. There is one slight problem with all this. I can't speak French. I don't even want to tell you how many years I've officially been trying, but...
Shameful.
Yeah, it's shameful, I know. But I am trying. I've taken a lot of French classes.
Exercice 20, page 40.
The problem is, I keep getting distracted.
Il y a un problème?
Like last year, when I signed up for this intensive French class at the Alliance Française, there was this Chinese woman from Shanghai in my class. She said she needed to learn French because she wanted to work in wine back in China. But then, after the second day of class, she dropped out. A headhunter, she claimed, had contacted her with like 5 job offers. Now, there's been tons of press coverage about the red obsession of the wealthy Chinese. But according to this woman I met, the media has completely missed the real story. The people who are doing most of the drinking now are China's elusive emerging middle class. And, she said, they are now traveling to France in droves to work in wine and learn more about art de vivre. This seemed to me like a pretty great opportunity for a show.
You mean a distraction?
I could do a podcast about this exchange between China and France and test out some of the theories I have about the magical powers of wine. And I could do this story with Mathilde.
Quand même le vin, le goût de Bourgogne, le goût de Bourgogne. Moi j'aime ce goût de Bourgogne. Or,
that's Mathilde's father, J.L. Her whole family comes to Burgundy for the summer, and they're all passionate and expressive when it comes to wine.
Alors moi j'ai une question. Est-ce que le Beaujolais fait partie de la Bourgogne?
Non.
Wait, what did you just say?
I asked if Beaujolais wine is part of Burgundy, and everyone made fun of me.
Mathilde, I realized might not be the right partner for the story.
Just because I'm from Burgundy doesn't mean I should know what the best one is or how to make a delicious bœuf bourguignon. I'm bored of these touristic simplifications, and it's terrible to see how easy it is to believe in them. But there is something about Burgundy that I feel deeply in me, and I would love to transmit it correctly. When I see the golden color of the houses in Cluny, or the vineyard slopes burning under the sun in Mercurey, I feel what the poet Jean-Christophe Bailly calls a revelation of belonging. I decided I would help Benjamin with his story, to grasp what is true and authentic and make sure it doesn't confuse postcards with reality.
C'est Pierre Auvernois, en fait.
First, I took us to a popular wine store in Beaune, the capital of Burgundy wine, so Benjamin could get some wine books in English.
Our shop is very famous because it's the most complete bookshop on wine in France. And so we have a lot of visitors worldwide, and especially from China, who are looking for books about wine.
This is Vincent Clément, a family friend. He's the owner of the shop Athénéum de la Vigne et du Vin. He sells books, maps, and now wine. He opened a bottle for us to taste.
Nous, on boit. Benjamin doesn't know how to do it.
What?
You need to...
To spit.
Like me, Vincent is from Burgundy. He's been immersed in the culture of wine his whole life. As a child, one of his favorite games was the nose of the wine, where you have to match up smells with flavors. But it was not until he was living abroad that he realized how lucky he was to come from such an exceptional place. When he returned home, he decided to go into the wine business. He wanted to share his passion with people who also appreciate French wine. And most of the real passionate drinkers, he says, are foreigners.
People from abroad that come here, most of the time they pay interest to wine. So it means the one we see, they are quite educated.
Vincent was especially impressed by a recent customer from Hong Kong.
This bottle is a Vaughan Romanée Premier Cru Les Mâles Consorts, Domaine de Montille. So it's quite a rare bottle. And the Chinese guy said, oh, but you don't have the Cuvée Christiane, because on this plot, Les Mâles Consorts, they have a very small cuvée called Cuvée Christiane, which is twice the price of this one, very, very limited. And the guy, he knew that it was existing and that it was much better than the one we were presenting him.
I'm not sure I will be able to tell the difference between Domaine de Montille, Les Mâles Consorts, Vaughan Romanée Premier Cru and Cuvée Christiane, but I can recommend you something very good that my brother rides his bicycle up the hill to buy every summer. It's a 8 € Givry red wine.
Most of Vincent's Chinese customers are wealthy, like that guy who wanted to buy that bottle of Vaughan Romanée Premier Cru Les Mâles Consorts Cuvée Christiane du Montagne de Montille. But, he told us, that's changing.
Last week, in fact, we were nearly closing the shop and five Chinese girls arrived. They wanted to test wine or buy wine, and we started to try to advise them. And in 5 minutes, there were 30 people from China in the shop asking to buy all the same bottles. And there were a group coming here. So with not really wealthy people, middle class, normal people, and just very crazy to buy a bottle of Bourgogne, more maybe like a souvenir, if we could say, than with a proper expertise to say, I want this one or this one.
That's the first time you've seen that.
Yes, it's really starting. It's really starting.
Even the president of China, we learned, is a part of this Vino Nouvelle Vague.
On his March 2014 visit to France, Xi Jinping met with many politicians, businessmen and winemakers, and not just the Grand Cru producers like Chateau Lafite Rothschild.
At the City Hall in Lyon, the president came around my table.
Dominique Piron is a producer of Beaujolais wine. who represented his region at a food tasting during Xi Jinping's official visit to Lyon.
I have presented the Beaujolais, the region, the landscape. We had a few photographs, and I told them that we are not in a luxury market. We are right in the heart of the range, with wines of strong identity, wines that are not difficult to understand. He seemed very interested. Just after, I believe, a few minutes after, Mr. Fabius, the French minister, gave me my arm with a smiling and tell me, oh, good shot.
After this visit, Piron's China sales exploded. When we met at his winery in the village Villemorgon, he was packing his third container of the year.
They have discovered it, and they love it. And when they saw that was not an expensive wine, they love it more.
Xi Jinping is famous for his crackdown on corruption. So Chinese officials are no longer allowed to give or accept expensive bottles of French wine. He's also trying to wean the Chinese population off of rice wine, Baijiu. Grape wine is just much healthier. You know, the French paradox.
So you can see why Xi Jinping would find Dominique Piron's modestly priced Beaujolais so interesting. Which leads me to my theory. As more and more Chinese people start drinking wines like the ones Dominique Piron is producing, they're also going to discover French ideas about life. And my hope is that they will embrace these ideas with the same passion and fervor that they now have for hyper-American ideas. So they'll reject the 80-hour work week. They will reject the idea that money equals success. And they will reject the idea that bigger logos convey greater status.
But can you learn this from wine?
Wines are made for drinking, not for thinking. We mustn't forget this. Wine is for pleasure.
I think it's five years ago, we have a big increase in Chinese students. Two-thirds of the program are Chinese.
This is Joëlle Brouard. She teaches wine management and business, both in English and French, at the École Supérieure de Commerce in Dijon.
We have many case studies who can illustrate the marketing, the branding.
But it's not just label design and marketing campaigns. Joëlle's students spend time in the fields.
During holidays, they share also a family life with other students. It's also a way to discover the real way of living. We spend a week in Cahors, which is in the southwest of France. And during this week, they live in a winery by also the wine grower. So it was very funny to see the way the students share the life of people.
Sometimes the French life can appear bizarre to the Chinese.
So I can also give you a little story. Two Chinese were living in a domain in Cahors, but it was a very ecological family, and so they want to stop the Wi-Fi during the night because they want to protect also children. And they have also a cat, and the name of the cat was Free Tibet. And so for the students, it was so difficult to explain why the name of a cat was Free Tibet.
But the challenge for Joëlle's Chinese students is reconciling the friends of their dreams with the real thing.
For Chinese students, especially from girls, they dream from finding a prince in France with a castle, with who can buy all the brands they love in their country. So it's an imaginary, a very important, which is a way of living, but a way of living with luxury, castle, princess, and romanticism.
Did anyone find a prince?
No, she hoped to find a prince, but she find more frog than prince. But in Burgundy, it's quite normal.
sadly, we had to leave the bon vivant of Burgundy. It was time to go to Bordeaux. Bordeaux is the biggest wine region in France, and from where China imports most of its red wine.
Bordeaux is also where many Chinese investors are buying vineyards and chateaux.
You not afraid by the bats?
No.
We visited the Chateau de la Rivière in Fronsac, which was bought by a Chinese group in 2013.
Tragically, both the old and new owners, James Grégoire and Lam Koch, died in a helicopter accident right after the sale.
But according to marketing director Thierry Disclin, the plan remains the same.
They do not know anything about the wine, but they bought the chateau because they have a project to build a very luxury hotel here. The aim to build this hotel is to share the Chinese culture with the French culture.
And they hope to share more of their wine with Chinese drinkers.
Our wines are served on the plane on Air China in business class. So, and for us, it is a really good way of communication, of course.
We also met Xavier Buffaut, technical director of the chateau.
Je pense qu'on est au début de la consommation du vin en Chine.
If French producers want to reach new markets like China, they need to adapt. Right now, Xavier told me, the Chinese prefer sweeter wines. When I asked him if he would make his wine more sugary, he said, why not? Some analogists he knows who work in large cooperatives or negocies are already producing specific vintages for China. The content of alcohol, the content of sugar have been adapted for the taste of these customers. This is necessary, he insisted. Okay. Maybe a better question for this podcast is not how France is changing China, but how China is changing France.
The Chinese people, their number one destination where they want to travel to is France. The number one places in France where they want to visit is Paris and Bordeaux. And their number one hobby is wine. So this is a research that we've done through Christie's.
That's Karen Maxwell. She heads up the Christie's International Real Estate Office in the Bordeaux region. And she told us that the Chinese are keeping her very busy these days.
The market for actual wine product in China is growing hugely, and therefore makes sense to actually own some of the vineyards so that you've got control of the whole chain of supply. And also they have lots of ambitions to improve the wine, and so invest in the properties to improve it in time and make it something even better.
Not all of Karen's customers, though, are committed to taking off their shoes and sticking their bare feet in vats of grapes. Some of them just need a ton of wine.
One of my early clients that I had some years ago, he just said to me, I am in the property business. I have to give a lot of gifts to get my deals through and all the rest of it. I actually give 200,000 bottles a year. So he says, I want to buy a property here and I want to produce 200,000 bottles at least so that I can, you know, have my own stock. So that was one motivation. He didn't really mind what the wine was.
But of course, no matter what the wine tastes like, a chateau in France, that is a very special piece of real estate.
Some of our clients, of course, have made a lot of money in a very short space of time through industry or all sorts of things. And so they're probably quite attached to, first of all, getting a property with land, but also the history of it, because it's sort of giving them some status, which they can buy, in fact, you know, which they may not have just in their own country. It's difficult to know how important that is, but it seems to be quite important to quite a lot of them, is the status that they're getting and the kudos that they're going to be getting at home by saying, I've got a chateau in France.
Karen also told us an anecdote about a wine shop in Saint-Emilion.
Il y a un magasin de vin en haut de Saint-Emilion.
Two Chinese tourists came to the shop and bought a bottle of Petrus. Right after the sale, the clerk closed up her shop and walked down the rampart to get to her car. The two customers were sitting on a low wall in the sun, eating sandwiches and drinking their $2,000 Petrus wine straight from the bottle.
For me, this is just another instance of the French gawking at the Chinese. I mean, it's not like they were drinking out of plastic cups. I imagine they were just impatient. They understand that Petrus is a potent elixir. They just wanted the magic to happen.
And what happened when you finish a magic bottle of Petrus? Do you suddenly know how to speak French?
Wine is very important product to show the people we know the life, we know the art of the life.
Lily Juen works with Karen Maxwell in the Christie's International Real Estate Office.
Je m'appelle Lily Juen, je viens de Chine.
When she first arrived in France, she says she didn't know much about wine.
Before, 6 years ago, even I drink the white wine, eat my birthday cake. But now I think I won't do it. I will pair with a Sauternes or sweet wine to pair with my dessert. And I have different choice because now I know how to pair. I'm not stupid like before.
Lily invited us to her home, which turned out to be a chateau belonging to one of her customers.
Here is just 10 minutes from my office, and I asked him, I'm looking for an apartment. He said, okay, if you want, I give you the key. So this is really why I live here.
Do you take pictures of your selfies to send to your friends in China?
No, I never do it. It's so, English, how to say that?
Bling, bling,
it's too much because I prefer low-key.
Yeah.
I like my life here right now. It's cool. I play my guitar and to think about the French style life. I live in a castle, very cool life now. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, qu'il me parle de bas, je vois la vie en rose.
Lily sang La Vie en Rose and made us some tea.
Then she invited us to stay for dinner and meet her fiancé, a Frenchman.
We couldn't resist.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Jonathan Ducour is in charge of international sales for his family's winery. The Ducour family business started over a century ago. Today, it possesses over 13 chateaus in the Entre-deux-Mers and Saint-Emilion appellations. They produce 2.5 million bottles per year.
Even though the wedding is in 2 years, there are already issues.
His mother doesn't want we have people wedding. Yeah. His mother said we don't want journalists.
Yeah.
But for me, I have more than 20 Chinese journalists.
Yeah, but it's because, so you have to understand, Lily, that when you arrive in front of my mother and you say, oh, there is 20 journalists coming to our wedding in France,
yeah,
she gets scared.
Yeah.
You know, it's normal.
Jonathan and Lily have very different ideas about what it means to live well.
I think the, like, China dream, Chinese dream, the final aim is we want to be rich. For us, I think the China dream is like a simple aim, just you can buy everything immediately. I would like, how to say, don't save 2 years my pocket money then to buy a bag. I would like, I saw something, I'm interested in it, I will buy it right now.
With Lily, we have different view of what is important in life. I think once she will have enough money to feed her needs, she will look for more relaxed way, healthy way of life, and living in a good environment, having the countryside around you, and just being free to do whatever you want. I think that's the most important.
For his successful life, it's a simple life. To be happy with the kids, with family, and have a simple job and have time to share with family. For Johnson, this is the successful life. But for me, I think because in China, we have too much competition. If you stop to only focus your life with your family, you will lost your way, because everybody they grown up, and you still keep your place. It's very dangerous for me. This is the reason why I always study, never stop.
I think she's running after more and more success, and not building self-confidence, just getting new success to be sure she's doing good things. But I'm sure she will get on my side at a certain point.
Like a couple, I want to change his mind, and he also wants to change my mind. But deeply, I have my Chinese blood. It's very hard to me to 100% to agree with that.
As we were leaving, Lily told us about a recent dream that she'd had, about beards.
It's barbe in French.
1 month ago, I wake up and I'm crying. And Johnson asked me, "Hi, darling, what's wrong with you?" I said, "Oh my God, I just did a horrible dream. We have a daughter and she had a big barbe." And Johnson, he laughed at me. He said, "Oh, come on, baby. Don't think about it. Why you have this kind of dream?" But you see, for me, I'm scared.
To me, the bird represents her life in France. Even if she enjoys the untidy and laid-back French style, she still sees it as a threat to her identity. She fears of creating a slow-moving Frankenstein monster.
She might be a little bit afraid of change, but I think the beard represents the wise old man. Chinese people trust older people more than young people, so I would say her dream is an acknowledgement that even though she's on a new path here in France, it is the path up the mountain to the summit of wisdom.
I must have drunk a lot of grey bottles without realizing it.
Back in Burgundy, we met up with Mei Hong.
Today, Mei Hong is a wine agent in Dijon, but for many years she was an overworked investment banker.
I had very little time to really enjoy the money I earned, for example. We work 80 hours a week. This is kind of crazy life as an investment banker. In Hong Kong, in New York, it's the same.
It was a budding interest in wine that brought Mei Hong to Burgundy. And even though she was unsure about life in a small town, she discovered and fell in love with the people and their relationship to their terroirs.
It's really funny because it's the first time in my whole life I live in a small town Well, Dijon is the capital of Burgundy, but compared to New York, Hong Kong, I mean, it's really a very small town. And I sometimes feel surprised. How come I could live here for so long? I never lived in a small town in my life before that. And also, Burgundy is so special. It's that what makes this region so so charming to many people is that a lot of, we say, vignerons is the domain owners. They are not really enologists who studied the science in school, how the science of making wine. A lot of people make wine with guts feeling, and they were winemakers because they inherited the domain from several generations, and they have an intimate relationship and feeling, emotion towards their soil, their vineyard, and they make wine with lots of guts feeling.
As a Burgundy person, I feel a bit of pride to hear Mei Hong talk about how easy it was for her to trade in a glamorous big city, fast-paced lifestyle. And I was pleased that Benjamin met someone who is not from here, but yet understands and appreciates the simplicity and modesty of the Bourguignon. The wine from my region might be very powerful.
It's really really a magic product.
For me, the person whom I think most experienced this magic of French wine is Yongping Gong. She's also a wine agent, living and working right now in Bonn.
In China, everybody study for something, just for some money. But in France, I found somebody do something just for the passion. For me, it's the first experience to find the difference.
When Yongping came to study in France a few years ago, she wanted to go to business school. But she didn't get in, and she couldn't afford French classes. So she applies to the Institut Universitaire de la Vigne et du Vin of Bourgogne University in Dijon. Here she was exposed to different definitions of success and time. And she discovered her own passion for wine. When she returned home to work in China, she felt out of place. She missed the French way of life. So she took a leap of faith.
I stopped my job in China, and I come here and begin from zero. All the Chinese friends can't understand. They said, "You're crazy."
Her French friends did not think she was crazy, though. They even offered her their couches and canopies. They had faith that Yongping would be able to forge a new life in France. And she's proved everyone, including herself, right.
Firstly, I think in the wine, if we want life, it's okay, no problem. It's easy. Perhaps we can't get rich, but we can live well. Today I can say that, yes, I had found it. My passion in my life in the wine.
This episode was produced by myself, Benjamin Walker, and Mathilde Bio, and we had help from Celeste Lai. Special thanks to all the folks we heard from in this episode, especially Lily Juan and Jonathan Ducour. There's tons of links and pictures and show notes at toe.prx.org.
Also, special thanks to Bertrand de Villars, owner of the domain of Château de Chamiret in Mercurey. He helped us navigate in the wine market in France and especially in Burgundy.
It's always the same progression. When people get interest towards wines, their final step is Burgundy.
Bertrand and his daughter Aurore also gave us a lot of tips for our trip to China. That's where we're going in part two.
The Theory of Everything is a proud member of Radiotopia from the Public Radio Exchange. Check out all the other shows in our tribe. Everything you need to know is at radiotopia.fm.
Hi, I'm Lindsey Graham, the host of Wondery's American History Tellers. In our latest series, we explore the emergence of a covert network of secret routes and safe houses known as the Underground Railroad, which worked to shepherd fugitive slaves to freedom in the decades before the Civil War. Listen to American History Tellers on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Radiotopia.